Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 11th of April, and I'm recording at 9:35 p.m., and that's British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes that we discuss. But first, let's have a quick look at the week. And it's been a tough week, for the most part, for equity investors. And actually, it started last Friday, as you might remember, when I posted those charts. You might have seen me post those charts of the downward dynamics that we had on the U.S. indices, including key day reversals for both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and also the S&P 500 index, which also signaled upside failures because they'd hit new highs the couple of days before and even on the day of the key day reversals. And then, of course, we've had the underperformance of the NASDAQ as well, which had been the leader on the upside. And we have, well, that's pulled Wall Street more in line with some other stock markets that were off their highs, some by a fair degree. And I think that there's little doubt that Wall Street has actually entered a corrective phase here. I think this will be the long-awaited 10% reaction, although I think it'll be more than that myself. The Fed may try to interrupt it a little bit, but given the gains that we had in the fourth quarter of last year, which of course were coming on top of a bull market that had been running since 2009, and given some of the additional gains on Wall Street that we saw at the beginning of this year, shortly after the Japanese, shortly after the January, they begin with J, don't they? After the January shakeout, which itself was a warning for stock markets in terms of this year's performance, not that we didn't have the warning of the huge gains that we saw last year. So this is a little bit of a choppy market environment here overall, and I think we'll see a further selling squall take place. But let's put it in perspective, because there have been some alarmist there's one alarmist forecast that's out, but I won't need to respond to that. But what I will say is that this is nothing like the size of the euphoria and bit of a tech bubble that we saw, or the bit of a tech bubble that we see is nothing like what had actually taken place in 1999 and 2000. Now, I said yesterday, and also in my written copy, that bubbles come in different sizes. This is a small to moderate bubble for the tech sector at most. But we know that Wall Street and a number of other stock markets have been fueled by the very accommodative monetary policies. And the Fed actually wanted a good run on Wall Street, and it certainly achieved that aim. And we also know that earnings have not been really keeping pace, and a lot of the earnings gains that we have seen in recent years. I mean, there has been some economic growth and some genuine earnings gains, but we've also had the share buybacks, which actually flatter the earnings. I don't want to overdo concern about that factor, but I think subscribers will be well aware that we've felt for a very long time that this year was going to be quite choppy, If anything, full points to the markets for holding off for so long, as they actually did before it before it set in. Now, is this a time to sell, or might we see a big crash, as one person is forecasting? Not in my opinion, and I think that certainly people who have been momentum investing and have chased markets higher, particularly tech stocks, well, if they haven't already got out, you know, they've already experienced 30-40% declines in a number of those shares, which I think in terms of some of the new tech are still somewhat overvalued. But as far as you know, dividend paying and attractive dividend paying, multinational companies, the autonomies that this service likes so much and that so many investors are interested in, I am generally against selling on weakness overall, unless something is very overextended relative to a rising 200-day moving average. And you've heard me say that before. So I think we'll go lower, and in the short term. And I make the point that the second quarter of the year and also the third quarter of the year are, on average, less rewarding than the first quarters and the fourth quarters of the year. And I think that will be the case this year as well for stock markets. Now, looking at some of them individually, one that has been particularly disappointing this year so far has been Japan. I mean, Japan did have a wonderful move last year. So a lengthy medium-term consolidation, which actually commenced last year, was very much on the cards. But Japan's been hit hard here recently, and there are several factors for that. I think the main one is apprehension over the sales tax that was introduced at the beginning of this month, and also the yen is not quite so weak as it had been, and indeed I think Japan will want to see the yen somewhat lower over the remainder of this year, and that was of course giving a big boost to the earnings of export companies in Japan. I was asked in an email, which I've answered, I won't repeat all of this, but whether Abenomics really was losing favor, well, or words to that effect. It's inevitably not as popular as it was, and not least because Shinzo Abe, concerned about Japan's high energy costs, and that's a concern that I've long had, as you may recall. He wants to restart some of the nuclear power stations, but that's not popular as far as the Japanese public is actually concerned. So his popularity in the polls has inevitably gone down somewhat. But here's something that may actually help it to pick up again. At the beginning of this year, the government, Japanese government, introduced something called the Nippon Individual Savings Account. And that's for Japanese citizens who wish to invest in the stock market. And it's quite a generous tax break. I think it runs for 5 years on gains. And the government may actually think that it's some softness in the Japanese stock market at this stage will enable Japanese investors to re-enter the stock market at somewhat more attractive levels. Well, don't want to spend too much time on that, but moving on, the stock markets that I have liked, Japan is definitely one of the ones that I still like, and there are some question marks over it at the moment, but I I don't like seeing technical erosion, which we're seeing a little bit of here right now. But I think it's too soon to write off Japan's recovery, and also too soon to write off Abenomics, and they go together. Now, the other two Asian markets, it's Asia Pacific markets that are the ones that are very in form right now are Vietnam. It's had a terrific year so far. It's in a medium-term consolidation phase here, but I don't think it'll give up too much ground. And the other one, of course, is India. And assuming that Narendra Modi wins comfortably, I think we'll be set for further gains in India, which hit a new high only yesterday. So what else to mention here? The European stock markets, big improvement in confidence generally among those European stock markets. We can give Mario Draghi, the head of the central bank, the ECB, give him a lot of credit for that, of course. And what about Wall Street? Well, it was too overextended previously, and thus I've gone full circle here on these markets. I think it'll pull back further. The share, but this sell off, what I just will add, and I've mentioned this before, but this sell off that's taking place in global stock markets, if it goes more than 10%, and I think it will, you could see the Nasdaq go down 20-25%. That wouldn't surprise me all that much, although that's the outside range of the forecasts. But a 10% plus correction will create some attractive buying opportunities, and I hope to participate in those myself. In addition to the not insignificant equity for me, equity position that I actually hold. Okay, what about other markets here? In the very short term, well, bonds have been very quiet, although yields are low, so that's certainly not providing too much of a headwind, unless you're worried about deflationary pressures, and some analysts are. I'm somewhat more relaxed on that front because I think we're getting a slow economic recovery, which is typical with what follows the credit crisis recessions that the world has seen on previous occasions. And you know that I think it was Rogoff and Reinhardt. Well, and there would have been others of the academic economists who've pointed out that it takes at least 5 years following a credit crisis recession for growth to get back to anything like what we would consider more normal levels. And this was a severe credit crisis recession, and it involved a good many countries, and so it stretches that recovery process out. It is a little over 5 years since that period of time, but it wouldn't be at all surprising to see this somewhat slow rate of GDP growth, but in fits and starts, gradually improving, as we're seeing in the USA, as we're seeing in continental Europe, as we're now seeing in Japan, and in a number of other countries. I think it will continue to pick up, not in a straight line, but in a sort of a choppy erratic fashion. So I don't think that this is a seriously damaged environment at this stage. It was 5 years ago, but it is gradually improving. Okay, the commodity markets. Well, we may see some cost pressures coming from this eventually, because we've had an impressive recovery. And I feel that really that the what I described previously as the secular bull market in commodities, and when I compared it to the recovery that we saw in commodities in the 19 in the 1970s. Now, this can go on for quite a while. It was certainly interrupted by a cyclical bear phase, which we saw, a cyclical bear market, and precious metals and just about everything else fell very sharply, as you're well aware. But we are in various stages of recoveries for these commodity markets, and I think they will range higher more often than not over the next few years. Hopefully, crude oil prices do not move significantly higher, and there are good reasons for thinking that we could avoid that because the renewables are coming on quickly, more even more importantly, well, at least solar is. Even more importantly, the fracking is spreading, albeit a little bit too slowly, in my opinion. But we're certainly going to see more fracking actually take place, and I think even Europe has got to be considering it now, given the situation with Russia and the Ukraine. And I certainly hope that we will see more fracking take place, because the last thing this economy or any economy needs is another spike in crude oil prices. I think we can avoid that, but I would caution against overconfidence in that view. My long-term view really has been that we would see lower energy prices in real terms because of fracking, because of the expansion of the renewables, particularly solar energy, which is the big one in that field by far. There's much more potential to improve that, whereas really wind technology, I think, is going to remain expensive, and it's limited. But we've been over all that before, so I won't dwell on that point. Also, new nuclear. We will, I hope, see more of that. We're certainly seeing that in some of the bigger developed economies such as India and China. And so that's not a bad overall scenario. Agricultural commodities, well, so much depends on the weather conditions. And there have been problems in recent years, as you know. Last year wasn't bad. Prices went down. But so far this year, from what we've actually seen in parts of Asia, and particularly in the South American countries, that's really led to some dips in crop yields, and that will If it's that will tighten supplies. There's no doubt about it. Well, okay. What about the big picture now here, in terms of the really big picture? Well, I think that commodity prices, there's certainly going to be a steadily increasing demand, not on a month by month or even year by year basis, but we're going to have a growing global go popul We have a growing global population. We have an environment now where Most countries are working on the basis of capitalistic economic systems, which is helping their GDP growth. We've got the rapid increase in the middle classes around the world, and that's going to increase the demand for resources. Will we actually have the resources? Well, indeed, I think we will. And I think technology, which has already helped considerably in the development of these resources, will continue to play a big part. So I think we'll see more often than not. We get plenty of volatility in those markets, but I don't expect any big commodity additional bear market anytime soon. And as global GDP growth continues to improve, as I say, there will inevitably be more demand for many of these commodities, from foods to metal prices, which are currently in base formation development programs. Hopefully, though, we will see enough additional energy supplies coming on stream to prevent the spikes in prices, as I mentioned earlier. Now, in terms of precious metals, I think we've seen the end of that secular bear phase here, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if we didn't see these markets range somewhat higher in coming months. There's a little bit of spike potential due to political reasons in palladium, for instance. Russia's the main producer of palladium, and the U.S. and other countries, European countries, talking about putting sanctions on in terms of exports. South Africa is the second largest producer of palladium, and they've got strikes in the mining sector there. I don't assume that those will go on indefinitely, but that is causing some supply concerns. And as automobile demand picks up, there'll be demand for more palladium and also platinum for the catalytic converters. So, again, main point is I think that there will be sideways to higher ranging more often than not in those markets. If we talk about currencies, something I've said for years, certainly since the big financial meltdown that we had in 2008, is that clearly and very understandably, no country really wants a strong currency, although some countries can live with a somewhat stronger currency better than others, but we have seen every country that has had a clearly strong run relative to the US dollar and many other world currencies. Any currency that's had a very strong run that we've had major intervention to drag that back in line, and we saw it most dramatically last year with the Japanese yen, one currency that had been quite strong over the last few years until a few months ago, was the Chinese renminbi. But we've seen that weaken quite sharply in the last couple of months, and I don't think that softening of the renminbi, I don't think that's over, given China's current problems. And but the overall trend here is that most countries are not going to want to see their currencies appreciate significantly because that hurts their export competitiveness. And the opposite side of the argument, where currencies have been overly weak, take the Indian rupee for example, that has compounded inflationary pressures. That problem has been sorted out for at least the lengthy medium term by the current central banker. So I think that what I'm trying to say here is that we will see most countries trying to prevent sizable moves in their own currencies, and therefore that when we get the occasional spikes up or down, those are more likely to be due to individual circumstances in a small number of countries or currency regions overall. If I gave a view here on the current position of these currencies, I would say, well, the yen needs to weaken a little bit further because Japan's econ that would help Japan's economy. I think the U.S. dollar, we all know that the U.S. dollar is on the lower side of its ranges overall against many currencies. And against many developed country currencies. And I think that on a medium to longer term basis, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the US dollar firm from current levels. But it probably won't happen to any significant extent for the next year or two at least. Certainly not until the U.S. GDP growth is stronger than it is right now. I think the Fed would be very, very happy to keep the U.S. dollar relatively soft and stable in this overall economic environment. The most exciting development or the most exciting markets over the longer term, I think, will definitely be stock markets. What we have seen, if we look back to the period of 2000 when we had that tech crash, that 99-2000 really marked the end of the last secular bull market. And equity investors know that it's really been at times, a very frightening roller coaster ride. Overall, and then we had the second big crash in 2008, and that terrified just about everybody. But the accommodative monetary policies that were then initiated, the quantitative easing that's come in, it was an extraordinary effort to help to lift those stock markets. And after two big crashes like that, which brought valuations down a very long way, that created quite an attractive environment for equities. And I think most of us have benefited considerably from that over the last few years. We're now in a choppy environment where, certainly as far as Wall Street is concerned, that not all equities, but a number of the ones that have been fashionable are pricey relative to other stock markets around the world. So we're going to see this choppy adjustment over the next few years. I think those valuations will be coming down somewhat, but I think we will not see anything for the overall indices that I would regard as a significant bear market. I think we should avoid that. And the factors that will help us to avoid that will be the continuation of a very low short-term interest rate. So we'll have a positive monetary tailwind, which will restrict downside risk for stock markets. And the big drivers of the next secular bull market, which I expect to kick in before the end of this decade, will be the technological innovation that I've talked about on so many of these broadcasts. It's actually the accelerating rate of technological innovation, which is hugely beneficiary for shares which are leaders in their field and can adapt these new technologies and increase their overall efficiencies. That is going to be one of the key drivers, technology, of the next secular bull market. And another key driver of the next secular bull market, I feel, needs to be and will be lower energy prices in real terms, and that will be due to all the renewable developments and some new nuclear and the additional fracking that I was talking about earlier on. And we also have an environment where the vast number of countries around the world today are operating on the basis of capital economic systems, and that produces the best overall growth over time. And that is something, we'll put it this way, we've got far more countries operating their economies on capitalist economic systems today than was the case at the beginning of the last secular bull market, which began, if you take it from valuation lows, in 1982. And then you've got the rising middle classes. Again, these are themes that I'm proud to say that this service has been on top of for quite some time. And that is a promising long-term future for stock markets, but we're not there yet. And we're in the middle right now of a corrective phase, which is going to continue, but not be a disaster. I think it will create an attractive buying opportunity in a few weeks, or depending on how quickly it gets down, or certainly in a few months' time. And on that note, all the very best to all of you. Have a great weekend.